And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
Biblical archaeology is a slow process. Not only does it take years to dig and sift the artifacts of biblical history, but it also takes years to analyze and interpret the discoveries. The most important things unearthed in 2022 will not be widely known for years, but the past 12 months have seen some amazing announcements of findings that expand our knowledge of the world of the Bible. Here are 10 of the most important archaeological finds that made news this year. Number 10. A papyrus in Montana. A scrap of papyrus framed and hung on the wall of a home in Montana was identified as one of a handful of Hebrew texts older than the Dead Sea Scrolls. The text is a little larger than a postage stamp, with four short lines of ancient Hebrew, including the name Ishmael. The unnamed owner said his mother was given the papyrus when she visited Israel in 1965. Israeli authorities believe it dates to around 700 BC. The owner agreed to donate the historic object to the Israel Antiquities Authority so that it could be properly preserved and studied. Experts do not know where the papyrus came from originally, but they do think it's genuine. Radiocarbon tests match the paleographic dating of the writing style. Ishmael was a common biblical name going back to the time of Abraham. Number 9. Farm life in Galilee. Rural life in Galilee came into sharper focus when work on a water project uncovered remains of a farmstead. The farm was abandoned for unknown reasons about a century and a half before Jesus' lifetime. The workers left behind implements and equipment, including pieces of a loom and large storage vessels, giving scholars insight into the average day at the time of the Hasmonean kingdom during the Hellenistic period, was expanding north from Jerusalem. The dig director called the discovery a time capsule frozen in time. Number 8. A Tel Aviv tomb. An accidentally opened tomb south of Tel Aviv revealed treasures that had been sealed away for 3,300 years. A digging machine fell through the roof of the tomb of an unknown Canaanite. When archaeologists entered, they realized they were looking at a burial chamber dating to 1300 BC. A video of the entry records them saying, "Wow, wow," over and over. Because the tomb was never disturbed and the items buried with the important person are still intact, archaeologists believe they will be able to learn a great deal from the excavation of the Palamim beach tomb, which is now being planned. They immediately identified numerous pots from as far away as Cyprus, indicating a lively trading network around the time the Israelites were free from slavery in Egypt, or perhaps 100 to 150 years after. Number 7. A monument to Hezekiah. Hezekiah is back in the news after the king of Judah's name had been confirmed in an inscription excavated near Jerusalem's Gihon Spring. Haifa University professor Gershon Galil has concluded that a piece of limestone dug up in 2007 is the first known monumental inscription celebrating a great achievement in ancient Israel or Judea. These were very common in other ancient cultures, but did not appear to exist in Israel or Judea. According to Galil, however, there is now evidence they did. He has deciphered the partial text of saying, "Hezekiah made pools in Jerusalem," which echoes the phrase in 2 Kings 20:20, quote, "He made the pool and the tunnel by which he brought water into the city," unquote. According to the biblical account, the pool was one of Hezekiah's great works, created to defend Jerusalem against potential sieges. Number 6. Peter's home. A prayer to the Apostle Peter adds evidence that El Arash is the true location of the New Testament town of Bethsaida. A mosaic at a Byzantine church uncovered near the shore of the Sea of Galilee includes a petition to the chief and commander of the heavenly apostles, a phrase commonly used by Christians at that time to refer to Peter. Archaeologists believe the inscription comes from the Church of the Apostles, which according to tradition was built at the historic home of Peter and Andrew. If so, that's a strong evidence that the site they're excavating at Arash is Bethsaida, the biblical hometown of Peter and Andrew. Some experts think another excavated site nearby, but farther from the Sea of Galilee shore, is Bethsaida. Number 5. Magnetic dating. scholars have discovered a new way of dating the destruction left by military conquests, giving them another tool to use alongside carbon dating, ceramic chronology, and epigraphy. In a joint Tel Aviv University-Hebrew University study, more than 20 researchers from different countries and disciplines were able to accurately date 20 destruction layers by reconstructing the direction and or intensity of the Earth's magnetic field left in the burnt remnants of 17 archaeological sites. They were able to identify the destruction date of the Philistine city of Gath and several other cities by Hazael, king of Damascus, around 830 BC. They subsequently discovered that the destruction of Beth She'an and two other sites in northern Israel, which had been associated with Hazael, actually occurred 70 to 100 years earlier, possibly at the hands of the Egyptian pharaoh Shoshenq. I think it's going to become part of the toolbox of archaeologists here in Israel, the lead researcher said. Number 4, reading Elamite. Scholars have cracked the code of an ancient language and say they will now be able to decipher Linear Elamite. A team of academics used a bilingual inscription naming several ancient Mesopotamian rulers written in Linear Elamite and Akkadian cuneiform 4,000 years ago to figure out more than 90% of the Elamite symbols. The writing system is believed to be a little younger than cuneiform, and about 40 known texts in Linear Elamite exist today, all found in what is now Iran. While cuneiform was deciphered in the 19th century, Linear Elamite has remained unreadable. The Elamites are mentioned a few times in the Bible. They were conquered by Cyrus the Great and became part of the Persian Empire. The story of Esther takes place in a Persian palace at the Elamite capital of Susa. Elamites are also mentioned in Acts 2, when the Holy Spirit empowered the apostles to proclaim the gospel in other tongues. Countdown continues with 3 ivory fragments. Ivory was more precious than gold in ancient times, but many tiny pieces have been found in the ongoing excavation of a parking lot just outside the Temple Mount area of Jerusalem. These fragments, discovered over a period of several years, are the first bits of ivory ever found in excavations of the city. Through careful cleaning and restoration, archaeologists have determined the ivory was used in furniture inlays decorated with rosettes, flowers, and geometric patterns. The ivory was found in the ruins of a large building that was devastated by fire, probably in the Babylonian destruction of Jerusalem in 586 BC. It could have come from Solomon's throne, which is described in 1 Kings 10:18, or the bed that the prophet Amos condemned in Amos 6:4. Number 2, curses on Mount Ebal. Archaeologists missed a tiny lead tablet when they excavated a site on Mount Ebal 40 years ago, but it was found during the wet sifting process in the re-excavation of a dump pile. And folded inside the tablet was a message that scholars say they've been able to reveal with a CAT scan. According to Scott Stripling, the head of the team from Associates for Biblical Research, the tablet has Hebrew writing that reads, "Cursed, cursed, cursed, cursed by the god YHW. You will be cursed. Cursed, you will surely, surely die. Cursed by YHW. Cursed, cursed, cursed." The two uses of the divine name and the chiastic structure are remarkable, and the text could also be the oldest existing example of Hebrew writing by several hundred years. The cursed tablet appears to date from 1200 to 1400 BC, which would link it roughly to the time that Joshua built an altar on Mount Ebal and pronounced a curse on those who turn from God and worship idols, Joshua 8:30. The interpretation of the text and identification of the artifact is disputed. Images of the inscription have not yet been peer-reviewed. And we're at number 1, a first sentence. An inscription on a tiny ivory comb excavated at Tel Lachish in southern Israel tops our list for 2022. The comb was dug up in 2016, but it wasn't until earlier this year that one of the excavation team members, Madeleine Monkulu, noticed scratches that turned out to be words. She sent a photo to an epigrapher who determined the marks were not only words, but they formed a complete sentence. The inscription is Canaanite, the first alphabetic language, and it's the earliest complete sentence that has been found written in the language. Based on the shape of the letters, it was written around 1700 BC, about 100 years after alphabetic writing first developed. The comb had big teeth on one side and smaller teeth on the other side, an early example of the kind of lice comb that can still be purchased today. The sentence says, "May this tusk root out the lice of the hair and the beard." Archaeologist Michael Hassel, who co-directed the excavation at Tel Lachish, where one of his students found the comb, told CT that the discovery provides new evidence for the development of the alphabet. Prior to this time, everything was written in either hieroglyphics in Egypt or in a cuneiform script by various languages in Mesopotamia, he said. So to have this complete sentence found at this early stage is quite remarkable. Writing on a common object also suggests that literacy in 1700 BC, centuries before the time of Moses, was not uncommon in the biblical world. The Canaanite alphabet was used to write the first books of the Bible in Hebrew. The Archbishop of Canterbury and the UK government condemned the blasphemous desecration of Christian graves in Jerusalem, including a British soldier's memorial. Israeli police launched a hunt for the vandals after more than 30 gravestones in the Protestant cemetery south of Jerusalem's Old City were toppled and smashed last Sunday. The attack came soon after Benjamin Netanyahu was sworn in as Israel's prime minister alongside the most far-right religiously conservative government in the country's history. Justin Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, said, "The desecration of Christian graves in Jerusalem is a blasphemous act. I join the chief rabbi and religious leaders in Jerusalem in condemning it and hope those responsible will be brought swiftly to justice." The UK government also condemned the vandalism, which is suspected to be carried out by Jewish extremists. Security footage showed what appears to be two youths who were wearing the religious Jewish garments of the kippah and knotted tassels, smashing the graves. This is the latest in a string of attacks against Christians and their property in and around the Old City. The government consulate in Jerusalem said in a tweet, "The perpetrators of religiously motivated attacks should be held accountable." Hossein Naoum, Jerusalem's Anglican Archbishop, said on Wednesday, "This really shows a clear hate crime towards Christians in Jerusalem, which we absolutely reject and condemn." He also said there had been a recent increase in people spitting at Christians in Jerusalem. Images from the cemetery on Wednesday showed that some gravestones had been split in two, including Commonwealth war graves. The cemetery was established in 1848 and is watched over by Anglican and Lutheran communities in Jerusalem, where tensions have soared in recent weeks over the appointment of the new Israeli government with extremist elements. Israeli police said they had inspected the damage and were investigating the attack. In a tweet, the Israeli Foreign Ministry said, "This immoral act is an affront to religion and the perpetrators should be prosecuted." No suspects have been detained or arrested as of Wednesday evening. In a statement, the Anglican Church said it was likely that these criminal acts were motivated by religious bigotry and hatred against Christians. A spokesman for the Commonwealth War Grave Commission told the BBC the organisation was appalled by the incident, adding, "A very small number of CWGC headstones were damaged. We are cooperating closely with the authorities on the matter, and our in-country staff are already working to carry out full repairs and return their graves to their normal condition." A letter written in 1723 by an enslaved man to the Church of England asking for help in obtaining his freedom, the earliest known plea of its kind, is to go on display at Lambeth Palace as part of a £100 million drive from the church to apologise for its shameful historical links to the slave trade. Church leaders have acknowledged that this is a large sum for the church to spend at a time when many parishes are struggling financially. But the Archbishop of Canterbury said it was acting rightly to address our shameful past. The fund has been announced by the church commissioners who handle more than £10 billion of assets for the Church of England. After a report found that much of this wealth can be traced back to investments in the slave trade made back in the 18th century. The Most Reverend Justin Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, said, "The full report lays bare the links of the Church Commissioner's predecessor fund with transatlantic chattel slavery. I am deeply sorry for those links. It is now time to take action to address our shameful past. Only by obeying the command in 1 John 6:7 and addressing our past transparently can we take the path that Jesus Christ calls us to walk and face our present and future with integrity. It is hard to do this at a time when resources in many parishes are so stretched, but by acting rightly, we open ourselves to the blessing of God. The church's endowment fund can be traced back to 1704 to a fund known as Queen Anne's Bounty, which was originally designed to provide support to poor priests. A report found, the research was clear, the origins of the fund partly came from the abhorrent practice of enslaving people 200 to 300 years ago. Most of this came from investments in the South Sea Company, a company which for many years shipped enslaved human beings from their homes in Africa across the Atlantic in appalling conditions. Researchers, including the retired Bishop of Birmingham, the Right Reverend David Urquhart, noted, "The church's involvement in the trade in enslaved people in this way shocked us." The church announced the £100 million fund for a program of investment, research and engagement. This will include funding to support communities affected by historic slavery and funding to support dioceses, cathedrals and parishes to research and address their historic links with slavery. Lambeth Palace, the seat of the Archbishop of Canterbury, will host an exhibition with material from its library's archive. These items include the original Queen Anne's Bounty ledgers and an anonymous letter written by an enslaved person in 1723 petitioning the Archbishop of London, the earliest known such advocacy for freedom, the church said. The letter asked for people of mixed race to be free, pleading, badly spelt, but pleading, "Release us out of this cruel bondage." A Church of England spokeswoman said, "The letter was written by an unknown slave to the Archbishop of London, which we interpret as being intended for the Archbishop of Canterbury, and makes a plea for freedom for enslaved people of mixed race. As far as we're aware, it is the first known letter from an enslaved person asking for help securing freedom for a group of people." No response from the church was ever recorded. Welby said, "The author remains unknown, except to God, who heard their plea and saw their suffering, and for whom injustice never remains hidden." The Bishop of Manchester, the Right Reverend David Walker, said, "It is important for the church commissioners to understand and be transparent about our past, so we can best support the mission and ministry of the Church of England today and in the future." Discovering that the church commissioner's predecessor fund had links to transatlantic chattel slavery is shaming, and we are deeply sorry. We will seek to address past wrongs by investing in a better future, which we plan to do with the response plan announced today, including the £100 million funding commitment we are making. We hope this will create a lasting, positive legacy, serving and enabling communities impacted by slavery. Dozens of Roman Catholic churches in Scotland are at risk of closure because parishioners prefer paying for Netflix and football season tickets over donating to the local parish, senior religious figures have warned. The Scottish Catholic Church says parishes were facing a perfect storm of financial pressures resulting from falling attendances, the cost of living crisis, rising expenses and the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. A spokesman urged Catholics to get real about their parish donations, but said he feared people would only wake up when church closures, particularly in poorer areas, were announced. According to accounts filed with the Office of the Scottish Charity Regulator, each of Scotland's dioceses have recorded a decline in income since 2018. Three dioceses, Dunkeld, Argyll and the Isles, and Glasgow, the largest, run a deficit. Churches closed their doors for 2 years during the pandemic and they faced tighter government restrictions on businesses or hospitality. Income at the Archdiocese of Glasgow plummeted from £26.5 million in 2018 to £10.8 million in 2021. In the same year, it spent almost £1 million more than it earned. The church spokesman said individual parishes paid an annual levy to diocesan officials, but were otherwise responsible for their own finances. With a few exceptions, attendance and income in every diocese are down significantly following the pandemic. The reduced income has started to bite, he said. Parishes in areas where unemployment is high and those in work are on low incomes will be hit hardest. Parish priests in these areas are already seeing their finances stretched. These churches can't afford basic repairs and insurance costs are spiraling. With attendances down, it might be very hard to keep dozens of churches open. If the situation does not change, then the next few years will be a really stressful test of the financial viability of parishes, and sadly, many may fail. The spokesman called on Catholics across Scotland to take a long, hard look at their church donations. If someone is spending more on Netflix subscriptions, football season tickets each month than they donate to their parish, then a financial reality check is probably in order. No area will be immune from what is a national financial crisis. Catholics need to examine their financial priorities. One priest in the Glasgow Archdiocese, who asked not to be named, said the church was facing a crisis of closures if attendances continued to fall alongside Sunday collections. A priest in Edinburgh said the problem of finances was historical. Catholics have never been good with money, and that includes us priests. I wasn't taught anything about the economics of running a parish while I was at seminary. Suddenly I am appointed to a parish and have all the bills and financial costs landing on the table. I'm a theologian, not a financial expert. And finally, Pastor Jamie was at a party, and after an hour his wife admonished him, saying, "That's the seventh large whiskey you have fetched back here. Doesn't it embarrass you?" "Why should it?" answered Pastor Jamie. "I keep telling them it's for you."
My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you, and goodbye for now.